Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Monday, October 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. There are signs that tomorrow's labor strike in Nigeria could be prevented.
The president really magnanimous and good faith in what he was doing, especially for the labor, and also pleading with them to exercise patience. They are now going to bring their people tomorrow with a view to withdrawing the strike.
Pre-election violence grows in Liberia amid a voter roll dispute. Malawi fights fuel scarcity with the rollout of its first electric vehicle. Two newspaper editors are elected in Eswatini's parliamentary elections.
My belief is that going there, I will engage with those in authority and those who are part of parliament to see how we could make the system work better.
Today, Monday, is World Habitat Day. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Nigeria, it appears a strike by a labor union scheduled for tomorrow, Tuesday, may be averted following a meeting on Sunday between unions and the government. The Trade Union Congress and Labor Congress have been holding nationwide protests over the suspension of a fuel subsidy and their demand for a new minimum wage for civil servants. On Sunday, President Bola Tinubu delivered an Independence Day speech and made offers that include a naira 25,000 or about $32.50 wage increase to lower-level employees to help them cushion the lifting of the fuel subsidy. Minister of Labor and Employment Solomon Lalong tells me that the unions have scheduled a meeting for Monday to consider what he calls the president's magnanimous offer.
The meeting was very good today. We understood ourselves with the labor, and I think we almost rounded everything, so it's just dotting the east and tomorrow, because they agreed that on so many of the things that we did. So the only thing is that protocol, they will have to inform their people tomorrow. And perhaps in the evening, tomorrow, there may be a communique.
I know the president spoke on this matter. What can you tell us about what the president said?
Well, most of the things the president said about it were issues that were raised from them, that they raised through our ministry, the Ministry for Labor. And some of the things they said are some of the things that will alleviate the hardship that are going to suffer as a result of the subsidy withdrawal. So I communicated the whole thing to Mr. President, and Mr. President agreed on substantial part of the recommendation, like things about transportation, the issue of palliatives that are going to go around, and then the tax reliefs on so many of the items, and then the consideration for small businesses. And those were mainly some of those things. And then how much, as to what will you be used now in the next 6 months, and then the new salary increase.
Do you think the federal government made enough offer for the labor to accept it?
The president was really magnanimous and good faith in what he was doing, especially for the labor, and also pleading with them to exercise patience as we go in implementing the sub. He made a lot of offers in the broadcast. And also, they saw that there was good faith in whatever he was doing. And then on those offers, they are now going to brief their people tomorrow with a view to withdrawing the strike.
The 25,000 naira wage, what can you say about that?
No. It's not 25. I think it's 35. The president earlier made an offer of 25, but in the course of our discussions with them, I think we went back to him and he increased it to 35. So it's not 25, it's 35.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
Solomon Lalong is Nigeria's Minister of Labor and Employment. He was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Liberia saw renewed pre-election violence over the weekend, allegedly between supporters of the ruling Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, and main opposition Unity Party. Meanwhile, the country's Supreme Court ordered the National Elections Commission, also known as NEC, to make available to the opposition the final voter roll ahead of the October 10 polls. Denise Nipsey has details from Monrovia.
According to social media accounts, video shows supporters of the ruling Coalition for Democratic Change and the leading opposition Unity Party fought each other in the northern region of Lofa County on Friday, leaving two dead. The police have yet to announce the findings of their investigations. Lofa County is Liberia's third largest county and the birthplace of Unity Party standard bearer and former Vice President Joseph Boakai. But the ruling CDC has been working over the years to gain a foothold in Lofa. The latest fracas has created fear across the country and led to condemnation by several individuals, groups, and missions, including the UN and the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. National Police spokesperson Moses Carter said at a joint security briefing on Saturday that an investigation had begun and that no arrests had been made.
The joint security is dispatching a special investigative team on electoral violence to FOIA Lofa County. And that team is going to investigate the facts, the circumstances under which the violence took place yesterday.
However, Unity Party spokesperson Mo Ali blamed CDC partisans for the attack and the county police commander for being punctured.
While on their way, one of the riders of a motorbike had a breakdown in the terrain that is not far from Representative Kennedy Thomas Fala, who is of the CDC. So while they were trying to face back, Thomas Fala guys came from the fence to query why they were in the area as though they had got absolute control over that area. So instead of the police serving as law enforcement officers, they are there taking sides with Thomas Fala and the CDC.
CDC Secretary General Jefferson Koji blamed UP and its standard bearer for not controlling their partisans.
There are a bunch of extremists who are desperate to return to state power, so they will do anything to push this country into a dark days. And Joseph Boakai, who is supposed to be the present providing leadership, doesn't seem to be in charge.
Meanwhile, the Supreme Court on Friday mandated the National Elections Commission NEC to make the final voter roll for each magisterial area available for public inspection by 4 p.m. UP Chairman Reverend Luther Tapper said 14 of the 15 counties' final rolls were made available except for Monserrate County.
That they have been able to receive 14 of the counties remaining Monserrate. So NEC prayed the court that by Monday for the end of the day, they will make that available to you, to the Unity Party.
CDC Secretary General Jefferson Koji said the party believes in democracy and transparency.
Anything that have democratic tenders, the NEC should not hesitate to do that. What these people need to do is to go and campaign. They should not come and create scare party.
Both parties are calling for an immediate investigation into the FOIA electoral violence as the NEC has yet to produce the full voter roll for Monserrate County. For VOA's Daybreak Africa, I'm Denise Nipsey in Monrovia, Liberia.
Results from last Friday's Eswatini parliamentary elections are still coming in. However, two journalists are among the legislature's newly elected members. They are welcome Dlamini, former editor of the Times of Eswatini, and Alec Lushaba, former editor of the Eswatini Observer. Former editor Dlamini says his background as a journalist would help him contribute to making Eswatini better politically and economically, because journalists cover the issues every day. Dlamini tells me that he will work hard to serve his constituency plagued by poverty and high unemployment.
I think for me it's going to be a huge challenge because of the constituents that I'm coming from and because of the challenges that the community is facing and the country as a whole, you know, because I'm from an urban constituency, one that is in the capital city, but then there's a lot of poverty there and there's a lot of unemployment there. So, yeah, I expect a lot of changes.
Going into the election, there have been this controversy. Some people say that's not true democracy, what's happening in Eswatini. You're being elected. How do you see the system? Are you there to better the system or to legitimize it?
I'd say that there's no perfect political system. Even those countries that claim to be democratic have got their own challenges. So I'd say that even our system has got its own challenges that I believe we can agree to fix as a country, not as individuals. It's not useful to critique a system but then not work towards refining it or making it better. My belief is that going there, I would engage with those in authority and those who are part of parliament to see how we could make the system work better. But I think, it is a democratic system.
You talk about your constituency. Can you tell us more about your constituency?
It's one of the biggest constituencies in the country and one of the most controversial. It's in capital city and semi-rural in some areas. So, there's a lot of urban poverty in other chiefdoms within the constituency. And there are issues of property rates that some people cannot afford. So we need to address those issues. And then there's also high unemployment,
Before I let you go, you are coming from journalism to be in parliament.
Yes.
What do you want to tell other journalists?
I'd like to tell them that, as journalists, the experience that we get there while we're in the craft can also help us into politics because we know the issues. We write about the issues of the day. We interrogate the issues every day. So we can also contribute to making our society better as journalists because we are more conversant with what is happening in the country. And our experience will also contribute to making our political system better as a country, politically, socially, and economically.
Welcome. Thank you very much again. And please, congratulations for your election.
Thank you. Thank you so much, James.
Welcome. Dlamini is the former editor of the Times of Eswatini and now the newly elected member of Eswatini's new parliament. He was speaking with us from the capital, Mbabane. The editor of the online Swaziland News says Friday's parliamentary elections means nothing because elections in Eswatini are not democratic. Zwelle Martin Dlamini fled Eswatini to South Africa 2 years ago. Last year, Prime Minister Cleopas Dlamini declare him and his newspaper as terrorists for their critical reporting against the government. Editor Dlamini tells me that members of parliament have no power to hold the executive accountable and are forced to submit to the authority of the king.
The recently concluded parliamentary elections in Eswatini does not mean anything because those who have been elected will not have the powers to form a government because in Eswatini, parliament is subjected to the authority of the king. MPs does not have powers to hold the executive accountable, but then they are forced to submit to the authority of the king, which is an absolute monarchy. So there is nothing that we can expect from the recently elected members of parliament.
I listened to King Mswati III during his speech at the just-concluded UN General Assembly, and he defended the Eswatini system of democracy, saying that the people believe in it and is based on the tradition of the country. What do you think?
King Mswati was not telling the truth when he said the people are happy with the system. As you might be aware, people recently protested demanding democratic reforms, which means they want to have the powers to form the government. As the situation stands in Eswatini, the people does not have the powers to form a government. They only elect individual MPs who, once they arrive in parliament, they don't have the powers to form a government. They are then forced to submit to the authority of the king. So the whole system in its entire form seeks to legitimize dictatorship because those who are elected are then subjected to the authority of the absolute monarchy.
Zwelle, I saw the results that came out that two journalists have supposedly won their seats. What do you make of the journalists who ran for their seats and won?
Thank you, James. In principle, let me first congratulate them because these are my colleagues. I've been working with them for some years in the media, and now they'll be members of parliament. But as I've just mentioned, they won't change anything. They will just get salaries and enjoy a good life as members of parliament. And if they are lucky, they will be elected into cabinet. But if they are not, they'll continue to serve in the legislature. But we don't expect anything from them in terms of influencing democratic reforms. But what we can expect from them, maybe they can influence development in their areas if they can, but not in terms of influencing political decisions that seeks to change the system of governance in Eswatini.
Mr. Editor, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Zwelle Martin Dlamini is the editor of the Exile Swaziland News. He was speaking with us from South Africa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Monday, October the 2nd. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. A renewable energy startup in Malawi, Sky Energy Africa, has rolled out Malawi's first electric vehicle, or EV. It's a move seen as a solution to reduce air pollution and carbon emissions that cause climate change. However, some engineers say a lack of trained personnel in servicing the electric vehicles could make the innovation unsustainable. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The very first electronic vehicle in Malawi. There you have it.
The historic launch of the vehicle comes as motorists in Malawi continue to spend hours in long queues at pump stations because of the recurrent fuel shortages Malawi has been facing for the past 6 months. Shizo Thompson is the founder and managing director of Sky Energy Africa. He told VOA that the electric vehicles would help Malawians in various ways, including saving their money.
When I'm talking about saving money, I'm trying to mean that this vehicle does not require monthly engine services or not require fuel to recharge. So it means they're going to save money, but also to bring convenience in their daily life because, you know, with the fuel challenges in Malawi, due to Forex, we believe that this will address this problem.
At the launch over the weekend, the company introduced the inaugural electric vehicle, the Citroen EC3, to the market. The vehicle accommodates both industrial and home charging gadgets, and it can run 320 kilometers on a single charge. Thompson says they have partnered with some pump stations to install industrial charging gadgets in their service stations. However, some experts in the car industry doubt the sustainability of the innovation in Malawi. Bon Vetan is the managing director for Bon and Auto Electricals, a vehicle servicing company in Malawi. He says Malawi does not have enough trained mechanics to service the electric vehicles, and this would make the innovation unsustainable.
So these cars will be giving more problems. People having them, where are they going to service these cars? In our school, we haven't learned about these type of cars unless we upgrade on how to service these electric cars.
But Thompson says electric vehicles are very easy to service.
There's no engine in it, there's no need for oil service, or what is in the electric vehicle are the batteries, then we have the inverter, then we have the motor, and this is something that we already do on our daily life. So this will be taken care of by us.
Malawi's Minister for Energy, Ibrahim Matola, was the guest of honor at the launch. He said the introduction of electric vehicle in Malawi is a step forward in technology in the country, and that the government will ensure the sustainability of the electric vehicles. For VOA Africa, I am Lamek Masina in Blantyre, Malawi.
As the international community marks UN Habitat Day today, Monday, the UN says the future of many countries will be determined by the productivity of their sites. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
World Habitat Day is celebrated on the first Monday of October each year with a global observation aimed at raising awareness about the importance of sustainable urban development, adequate housing, and access to basic amenities, with this year's theme being resilient urban economies, cities as drivers of growth and recovery. UN Habitat is calling for action on housing challenges, urban inequality, and environmental sustainability. Maimuna Sharif is the executive director of UN agency.
Let us remember remember that cities are not mere collections of buildings and roads. Cities are vibrant ecosystems of human potential and innovation. They are our future. In our challenging times of conflict, economic hardship, and climate disasters, cities have proven their resilience time and time again. Cities have emerged as islands of hope, where communities unite, ideas flourish, and dreams are achieved.
In the prevailing economic situation, local governments have faced increased difficulty in gaining increased access to external funding for development. UN Habitat Director for Regional Office for Africa, Omar Sylla, says most African countries do not have the financial capability to implement the project. Sylla told NTV Kenya that there is a lack of service delivery in most countries.
Unfortunately, we miss something because of our policy, because of our institutional framework, because of the weak governance system, which means that if you really want to transform cities in a way that a citizen can feel inclusive, you know, and being part and parcel of the process, of course, we need to look at the governance aspect, being able to capture the need and aspiration of communities.
UN Habitat, in partnership with the World Economic Forum, believes that various models to transform cities need to be implemented. Sharif says today's meeting will dwell on cities and their role in addressing the current threats, climate change, conflicts, and a lack of capital.
Resilient urban economies are not only about financing growth and competing to be at the top. It is also about nurturing the human spirit, embracing innovation, putting technology to serve human needs, and creating inclusive societies.
The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres says local action is key and global cooperation is essential in building inclusive, safe, resilient, and sustainable human settlements for all. The UN is calling on member states to advocate for affordable housing, promote sustainable urban development practices, and participate in local projects that aim to enhance living conditions, improve infrastructure, and create inclusivity among communities. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Sacramento, California.
It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports in France at the 2023 Rugby World Cup, where South Africa national rugby coach Jack Ninamba and captain Siya Kolisi both praised the team's effort and physicality against Tonga on Sunday night in their final Rugby World Cup pool match in Marseille, steering them to a 49-18 victory and doing all they could to remain in the running to defend their title. The Springboks currently lead Pool B with 15 points, although they have played one more game than Ireland in second place with 14 points and Scotland in third with 10 points, with those teams yet to face one another in their final pool match on Saturday, the 7th of October. The South Africans scored 7-3, and given the physicality of the match, coach Ninamba was pleased with his team's defensive efforts.
The key thing for us was to get a win first, and then to get a bonus point, and I'm not 100% sure, but I think we got that in the second half, early on in the second half, and then obviously chasing netto points as much as we could to put ourselves in a position to get out of our pool.
In athletics, Kenya won 3 of the 6 gold medals on offer at the inaugural World Athletics Road Running Championships in Riga, Latvia. In the men's event, Sebastian Sawe snatched the lead from compatriot Daniel Simiu with a few meters to the finish line after Simiu had led for the most parts of the race. Sawe, the Berlin half marathon winner, took the top honors in the new championship record of 59 minutes and 10 seconds, with Simiu yet again settling for silver after placing second in 59 minutes 14 seconds. Vienna City Marathon champion Samuel Maliu came home third in 59 minutes 19 seconds, with Bernard Kibet came home third in 59 minutes 19 seconds. In the female category, Kenya's Peres Jepchirchir successfully defended her world half marathon title after clocking 1 hour 7 minutes and 25 seconds. Margaret Chelimo came in second in 1 hour 7 minutes 26 seconds, and Catherine Reline came in third in 1 hour 7 minutes 34 seconds to secure a Kenyan podium sweep. With the victory, Jepchirchir moved joint with a trio of Tegla Lorope, Paula Radcliffe, and Lona Kiplagat with 3 wins at the global event. In tennis news, Tunisian's Ons Jabeur produced a dominant display to beat Dinah Schneider 6-2-6-1 in the Ningbo Open Final. It is her fifth Hologic WTA Tour title, second of 2023, and first of her career on hard court at the Ningbo Open. Jabeur, who is seventh in the women's rankings, secured victory in 78 minutes in China. And that's it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. And that's it for this Monday, October 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. I am James Bote in Washington.